Then I'm not in the chat room. Holy crap.
Oh.
That might be a thought.
Heavens, the Murgatroyd, just me and Chancer hanging out.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 67, recorded live Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. I am Joel Duggan, and to my right is Mr. Peyton Francis, returning from a few weeks away, triumphantly, from some visiting some family in Newfoundland. Dude, how are you doing?
All right, man. It's been an interesting couple weeks.
You know, good.
We all had to go home and say goodbye to one of my grandparents, so that happens, you know? None of us are getting any younger, and so that makes for a pretty intense week and stuff like that. So,
but probably good to see family, because I know when I mean, I just had an uncle pass not too long ago, and it, a sad event for sure, but nice to see cousins and like some of his kids that have been living abroad for quite some time, and they're never ever in the city all at the same time.
Yeah, well, so, my father's in BC, and I have uncles in Ontario and stuff like that, and their kids are all over the place. So it was nice for a bunch of us to be able to get home. And then at the end of it, my father was able actually to stop in and just hang out here for a couple of days.
Oh, so cool.
Last time I saw him was like almost a year ago. So.
Right. Yeah, because he was down for, was it Ewan's second birthday?
He was down for my nephew's graduation last year in Ontario, and he popped through in June. So.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's all good. It's all good.
So, very cool.
It's fun to hang out and all that fun stuff, and go home. But one thing about everybody in my family back home, they all smoke and have cats, and I'm allergic to both.
Oh, jeez.
So like staying at my, visiting grandparents, are like, why are you chain smoking? Please stop.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But you can't say anything when people are mourning. So.
No, yeah, well, this is the thing, right? It's not the time to bring that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you don't really quit smoking when you're stressed.
No, not many people do. I don't recall if many of my family smoke. I don't think many people do. I know they all enjoy a glass of wine, but to the point of excess.
Yeah.
But not smoking. No one, I think, not even on mom's side were heavy smokers. I mean the grandparents were back in the 40s, but I mean, like, you know, who wasn't?
Yeah.
Well, back then. Yeah. Back then. But I don't know, I've never had even the temptation to smoke. And Jocelyn and I went out to the movies last night, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and I was really surprised when we exited. It was the Park Lane Theater, so the one here in the mall in Halifax, and the number of young people that were just stopping immediately after exiting the mall, having been in the movie for 2 hours, and lighting up was ridiculous. I mean, we're talking people under 25. I just like, what? It still baffles me, because I mean, like, when I went to school, there was pictures of black lungs and people dying and all this kind of stuff that kind of made it a very unappealing idea. But apparently, some people just don't care.
No. Yeah. Well, you got to rebel against something. You know?
Yeah. And if you're a smoker and you listen to the show, I'm sorry.
No.
You know, just listen to them all at once.
If they're a smoker and they listen to the show, we're doing them a favor, because they're probably standing outside right now in the cold and the rain, having a puff, listening to us on their iPhones.
There you go.
iPods.
Entertaining their habit.
Actually, one of my neighbors back in college, she used to smoke all the time. She was always outdoors smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I always walked by. I'm like, you know, smoking's bad for you. You're going to get the flu. I kept telling her she's going to get sick because of that. And then one day I was walking in, and she had a six-year-old there. And I looked at her, and I'm like, smoking's bad for you. And she said something. And then I looked at the kid, and I'm like, you know, if your mom quit smoking, she could buy you a bike. And the kid looked at me, he's like, I already have a bike. And I said, no, she can buy you a bike that flies. And the kid's sort of like, what? And looked at his mother, and she's like, you son of a... Right?
Yeah, well, I remember, it's a story from quite a while ago, and I still remember the kid's name. It was Kevin Jones, was one of the kids in our preschool class. Like, I mean, we were under the age of 7. And his dad was a heavy smoker. And he convinced his father, and I think his family, like, I think both of his parents smoked, though his mother wasn't as bad as his dad. And he convinced them because he did the math in class. Mm-hmm. Like, he got his teacher to help him out with how much a pack of cigarette costs, how many packs his family smoked a week. And then he said, if you quit smoking, then inside of something like 8 months, they could take him and his sister to Disney World. And his parents were just like, well, he's doing the math of a sixth grader and he's in grade two. And he wants to, and it's not like he's being selfish. Like he wants the whole family to go and spend time together. So they quit smoking.
Nice.
Which I thought was very cool. And that story has always stuck through me, with me from way back then. Geez, that was like 26 years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah. It's all about finding something, you know, finding the right motivation. Well, for anything, you know.
But, well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So other than that, you know, it's back here in town. It's good to see, you know, familiar faces and all that fun stuff. Yeah. And
back to the rainy Halifax.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, at least, you know, after I left home back in Newfoundland, they had 54.5 centimeters of snow.
Oh, my God.
In a period of a day and a half over May 2-4 weekend.
Oh, my God.
And then yesterday, I think it was 15 degrees there. So I'm assuming there's going to be a fair bit of flooding.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So, anyway.
That's
a lot of snow in a period of a couple of days. Now, it's a big joke back home that every Victoria Day weekend or May 2-4 weekend, it always snows. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Around here, I used to joke that it used to snow on my birthday, but it hasn't for quite some time. And that's usually at the end of April. Mm-hmm. But I don't know about you, man, but I am exhausted. I don't know what it is this week. I haven't been able to really do a whole lot. The last several weeks have been really busy for me in terms of stuff on the drawing table and stuff that I've been doing, because I have finally, as of right now, have delivered almost all, because you don't count. I'm holding your book right here. Your Indiegogo package is right here in my hand. But everything from the Indiegogo package for Starcross Volume 1, the book that I published in the fall, has been shipped. That is under my control. There are still t-shirts to be going out to people, and those are going to be codes that /loot.com will send me when they're ready. I should actually have proofs for the t-shirts in my inbox in the next 36 hours, give or take. So, very happy about that. But do you know what I mean? Like, well, you're an artist. You work on deadlines. You know what it's like when you work your ass off to meet the deadline and it's done. And then you have a day to kind of like, you know, bask in the finale of it all. But then you're like, it hits you. Like, I am freaking tired.
Yeah.
You know, and I've put the comic on hiatus for several months so I could work on all this stuff while I'm trying to get comic work out the gate. Because when I first stopped doing the comic for a little while to focus on the Indiegogo stuff, I was still consulting and traveling back and forth between Ottawa and Montreal and here. And so, I mean, like, it took a lot longer than I thought. So I'm excited to get back into drawing the comic, but I'm also just really relieved that everybody that was so generous to help me crowdfund and print the book now has their original art or their, you know, original comic strip or commission or t-shirt or whatever it is that's coming to them. It's all taken care of. Like, I really only have kind of like that credit list of thanks to put up on the website, one final blog post to say thank you to everybody, and that's it. So I'm really stoked to have that kind of stuff out the door. But yeah, like, I can't believe how much it's just taken out of me. And then I look at someone, or I guess not someone, but the guys at like the Creature Box company, or I guess the Creature Box team, where they, Greg and Dave, that do these wonderful, you know, character designs and artwork, and their, you know, Kickstarter campaign that was super successful, like to the tune of like they were asking for $20,000 or $30,000, and they got like 160, like it was, or they doubled at least, like it they made. They didn't make a lot of money, but they raised a lot of money to then put towards a very, very cool package for this book. And I can only imagine how much work it's been for them.
Yeah.
Like I had to fulfill 100 orders.
Yeah, but your graphic style and your line mileage and your line usage is a lot different than theirs.
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I mean, like they're a little bit on the faster, more gestural side with their drawing, but it's still, I mean, some of the stuff they were doing was like, you know, hand color, depending on what level of stuff that you got. And I don't even know if they're done yet.
Yeah, but they might also skip some of the underdrawing and things like that as well. So,
well, maybe I don't know, but you know, but they also have, I mean, I don't know how many orders they had, but I mean, it must have been into the thousands.
Yeah,
you know, to fill that much. I mean, they really, I mean, they aren't kidding when people talk about crowdfunding a book or any kind of project. Like, you have to be prepared to switch from being in the creative business to being in the shipping business.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure that their spouses or better halves or, you know, sisters, mothers and brothers were all kind of brought in. Oh, yeah, brought in as part of the, what are you doing today? What are you doing with your Friday night? Well, I'm buying my family pizza. And then actually, they're going to help me stuff boxes.
That's not a bad idea if you were to do this again.
Oh, yeah.
You actually get an intern.
Look, you know what? When we interviewed Dave Kellett a month or two ago on Comics Coast to Coast, he said that one of the best things that he did was he has a seasonal intern.
Yeah.
And it's someone that he hires, or as, I guess not an intern, it's a seasonal assistant that he hires whenever he has a new book printed and there's orders and stuff to go through. And that's essentially their job, is to receive and fulfill and mail and ship stuff.
Print labels.
Yeah.
Labels,
all that kind of
stamps,
stuff.
All that
yeah.
Stuff.
All that, just stuff that's not hard. I mean, you can throw a podcast on and do it, but it takes time. You know, it really eats up your production day when you should be or want to be, you know, creating and doing some stuff. But yeah, other than that, the only thing that I've noticed with me being so tired is that my patience is really thin. And I'm usually a very patient person, but we've been having problems with the apartment here, and I'm so done with this building and the landlords and the superintendent. Like, have you ever talked to somebody and during a very normal conversation, you can see the synapses firing as they're trying to form words while they're talking to you?
Or misfiring.
Yeah. This is the person that is in charge of the upkeep of my building. Like, it is infuriating to try and get any kind of point across to people. So I'm having some, I mean, some things are just a little like a leaky faucet or something like that, but we had like a leak in the roof a few weeks back, and there's just a lot of things that are starting to pile up. And Jocelyn and I are just really frustrated with, she just moved down here, I guess it's been a year, but it just, like, she's moved kind of like every year of her life since she's finished school, and I've been here for a while, but I mean, I have no desire to move to a place until it's like a house, you know, someplace that we can own.
Yeah.
So we're kind of stomaching, you know, living in this apartment for a little while longer, but it's so frustrating to have rent continue to go up and have the services that these people are supposed to provide you continue to decline. And I'm to the point where I'm probably going to take the time, now that this Indiegogo stuff is finished, to look up kind of like the tenant landlord agreements and rules and regulations in the city and see what I can't say. Look, you know, until you fulfill this, I'm not paying my rent. Like, I have to look at it legally. Like, I don't want to do anything foolish, but if I can find a part of my lease that they are not fulfilling, then I'm going to stick it to them because I'm just done. It's been one of those weeks where it just, you know, one, like, little things just continue to go wrong. And, you know, like, the super that you thought was the super is no longer the super. And there's a new person. It's like, how am I not informed when the superintendent who lives in my building has been changed? You know, like, it's crazy. I mean, and you remind me, how long has it been since you've lived in an apartment? Because, I mean, you've had a house for a while now.
Yeah, probably about 4 years.
Yeah. And then when you and the missus were working on campus and stuff like that, that was all taken care of.
Yeah. Well, it was part of her compensation package, but it was taxable. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't free by any stretch. So.
No, but you probably still had a maintenance person that was able to come by.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was part of the maintenance department because it was part of the university.
Yeah. Department. Yeah, exactly. But so it was reliable.
Yeah. Well, to a degree, because, well, most places now, you know, the issue we're running into, I think, systemically across the board would be deferred maintenance, because, you know, the heady days of years gone past when all the money was thrown around for infrastructure and all that stuff is all gone now, and everybody's like, well, we'll take care of that roof in another year from now. And then 5 years pass and all of a sudden a large chunk of roof falls in the bathroom and kills someone in the tub, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just, you know, yeah, deferred maintenance is everywhere, and things are gonna get worse and worse. So Better off moving into a cabin in the woods and getting off the grid.
Put up your own windmill. Get a couple of foxes to get them running wheels outside.
No, you don't want a windmill because people can see that from a distance. And then once the apocalypse comes, they got a place to come and try to steal your power.
Oh, I see.
So what you want to have is, you know, solar powers or, you know,
yeah,
some sort of tile generator you can't see. You want a moat, you know, stuff like that.
A moat. Actually, you know, a moat would be cool. If I ever have a house, I'm putting in a moat.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, you wouldn't call it a moat. You can call it just, you know, an elliptical pool that goes around your house. You can do laps around your house. It's all well and good. But, you know, if things turn south, all you got to do then is release the sharks. Lay it on their head, right?
Yeah, saltwater pool.
Oh, yeah, well, if you use a saltwater pool, you haven't got to use chemicals to clean it, and then, you know, it just takes care of itself.
Yeah, or a freshwater pool, just piranhas.
Piranhas, yes.
Yeah, but, probably cheaper than sharks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of moats, this is the part of the show where we move into our movies, TV, and video section. And as per usual, we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones in our Winter is Coming Season 3 Epic of All Epicness segment. And this is Episode 8, entitled Second Sons. And if you have not seen it, or you have not caught up on the season, we will warn you, there are going to be spoilers. We spoil the crap out of the show because we love it so much. We're excited to talk about this episode. So if you want to join in with the show a little bit later, I usually post in the blog the time code when we stop talking about Game of Thrones and move on to other things. If you have not, you might want to just wait until we're done with the season, or you can go back and listen to other episodes of the Citadel Cafe on CitadelCafe.com. I think we started with episode 60 with this year of Game of Thrones, and everything else beyond that or earlier this year is safe for listening and not, when we say watching, but we don't do video, so at least not yet. I guess I can kind of summarize this episode. On King's Landing, they hosted the wedding of Tyrion and Sansa, which I don't think many people saw coming until a couple weeks ago. Cersei threatens Margaery in the Sept of Baelor, and Joffrey is the one that gets to walk Sansa down the aisle, much to her chagrin. The Hound reveals to Arya that they are heading for the Twins to ransom her to her brother. Melisandre and Gendry arrive at Dragonstone, where she seduces him, extracts blood, and then creates three leeches for Stannis to cast into the fire. And name three usurpers that he feels are threatening his claim to the throne. And Daenerys finds out that Yunkai employed a mercenary company called the Second Sons, hence the show title, to defend the city against her and her Unsullied. And then Sam and Gilly are attacked by a White Walker, who Sam destroys with the help of a dragonglass dagger. So I'll throw it to you, man. We haven't had you on for a while. So what were your initial thoughts for this episode? Any favorite scenes that kind of stuck out? Where do you want to start?
He left the dragonglass behind. Yeah. What the hell, man?
Me, Jocelyn, and I looked at each other at the same time and said the same thing. Yeah. It's the one thing that kills these things, and you dropped it.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no, it was... I guess it's been 3 episodes since I've been on the show. So yeah, it's all good. Mm-hmm. I like the Tyrion and Sansa thing. I think is unfolding nicely.
He stole the show, I think, as far as the quiet conversation and the drama was concerned. Yeah. I feel like Tyrion drunk at the wedding was hilarious.
It's also great that he's able to. It's also a great opportunity for Joffrey to show again how much of a monster he is by threatening to come and put a Lannister in her.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
And all that fun stuff, which is actually interesting as well when he says that, because he should be identifying himself as a Baratheon.
Yeah.
So he must, in his mind's eye, understand that he's Jaime's son.
Yeah.
But anyway. And, Cersei, having a polite little conversation.
Well, I really enjoy the back and forth between Cersei and Margaery before the wedding, because I mean Margaery is still kind of doing that political dance of being very polite yet rubbing Cersei's nose in the family plans and who she's going to have to marry, and Cersei has no tap dancing skills whatsoever. She just goes right for the throat, literally. Yeah. Says, "You call me sister again, and I'll have your throat cut in your sleep," or something like that. Strangled in your sleep. And just like, man, like, balls to the wall, fuck off. Yeah. I really enjoy both of their characters when they have their backs up against the wall. It's like when their cunning comes out the most, I find. I like that Tyrion was able to use being so drunk to stand up to Joffrey too.
Yeah.
Because it was like a traditional wedding, bedding ceremony or something like that, where basically everybody carries Sansa off to the bedroom and then, either witnesses or stands outside the door while, Tyrion and Sansa are supposed to consummate the marriage. And Tyrion will have no part of it because he knows how poorly Sansa has been treated so far in the whole series.
And he is the god of tits and wine.
Yeah, exactly. So I couldn't pick a favorite quote from this episode because there was just so many, so many. And I thought it was a great opportunity for him to be able to say some really some stuff that he has said to Joffrey before, but
and has always been able to.
Yeah, and but has been able to do it in private. Yeah. But to do it in public, I mean, like, if he wasn't drunk, Joffrey would have to reprimand him. Like, there would be no quarter. Like, he would have to go after him. And if it wasn't for Tyrion being drunk, it's almost like he was clever enough to remember that, hey, look, I've already made a fool of myself. Nothing I say here can really be taken seriously.
Yeah. And I think he probably wasn't as drunk as he let on.
No, I don't think so either. I thought he was going to snap to a much soberer state. When they got back to the bedroom and Sansa was disrobing and you knew he was going to, you know, be a gentleman about it and stuff like that, which I thought was very cool. But he was still very drunk. I thought he was going to reveal to everybody that it was more of an act than you thought. But I really enjoyed that whole exchange, you know, like the whole seeing Tyrion's, chivalry stand out a little bit. Sansa's, I guess, innocence in the whole situation. And I wish that we got to see more of like an understanding between Sansa and Tyrion. Like, I feel like,
well, but I think if you try to do within the first episode of this story arc, it'd be a bit rushed.
Yeah, but I feel like I thought that he's had more opportunity to talk to her since. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a little bit more of a rapport there, I guess.
Yeah,
but
I also enjoyed that as another opportunity again to show, again how Joffrey is still a little boy as well, because that moment is like, what did you say to me? And you get a flashback of Tyrion smacking him in in Winterfell, you know, by a mistake, sort of thing, right? He flashes back to that sort of moment. Like, I can't believe you're doing this again, sort of thing, right?
Well, and he did it again in season two after the mob tried to kill them when they were leaving Flea Bottom or something like that. I can't remember where they were. They were putting Joffrey's sister on a boat to, I don't remember the name of the place.
Yeah.
I know where it is in my mind, but I can't remember the name of it right now. But Dorne, that's it, Dorne. I mean, he did it again when he smacked him and... And I can't remember what he said, or you can't insult or assault the king. And Tyrion calls him a name and punches him and says, now I've done both, you know?
Yeah. There's a few moments like that, I guess. So. Yeah.
Well, Tyrion seems to be the only one that's willing to put Joffrey in his place.
And Tyrion and Joffrey also understands too, like, you know, deep down, he knows that, he owes the kingdom to Tyrion because of the Blackwater.
The Blackwater. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if a good portion of that is, like he sees an opportunity to be a bully to Tyrion because of the size difference and the fact that Tyrion has always had to deal with that. But I feel like there's also some jealousy there.
Yeah.
You know, because of Tyrion's battle strategies and his knowledge and political moves and how.
And charisma.
Yeah, people don't necessarily like Tyrion, but he's certainly able to manipulate them and get what he wants.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that Joffrey dislikes, because if you remember from last episode, there's a scene with Tywin and Joffrey. And Tywin, again, is manipulating Joffrey, and Joffrey is unable to, like, do the same. Like, Joffrey is the one being manipulated, and he's aware of it.
Yeah. And he's well, I should be informed of this. Well, you're being informed now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, while we're in the south, Melisandre was able to get Gendry back to Dragonstone, and the thing that I didn't like about this scene was, I understand that, you know, Gendry was supposed to be, you know, having never been with a girl and having never been in the presence of royalty or this much money, and didn't know that he was the bastard son of Robert Baratheon, but how stupid can you be? Like, there's something that just, maybe it was just something that was burned into me from an early age, because I saw Conan the Barbarian long before my mother would have let me. My dad was okay with it, but long before I probably should have seen it. And if anybody that remembers, there's a scene where Conan is wandering the wilderness and is invited inside by a beautiful woman who is very quick to bed him, and she turns out to be this pointy toothed, like, clawed witch that he throws into the fire. And it just kind of, this thing that sticks with you is like, just because they're all sexy and naked and in your face doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea. And I just, Gendry was basically paid for shackled and then brought back to somewhere else where he didn't want to go by force. And then she's stripping and all of a sudden he's getting in bed with her. I'm just like, that is the worst idea ever, dude.
I don't know. If you're going to go, go with a smile on your face.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. If, I mean, well, we all know what she's capable of. So, I know, I'm not sure if that would be a smile.
Right?
No, I know. But I just, I realize that. But even then, I feel like, generally, he seems to have enough smarts about him that, it wouldn't be an issue. But, yeah, I didn't buy that whole thing. That was kind of an issue for me.
Also, in his eyes, low-born and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, no, I get that. But
not to just obey sort of thing,
yeah,
right?
But, and a leech on the groin. No, thanks.
Yeah, no, that's a little bit similar but different than Stand By Me.
Yeah. Stand By Me, brought to you by George R.R. Martin. Just what you need. That was a gross scene. I mean, when Stannis, he says, Balon Greyjoy, Robb Stark, and who was the other? Joffrey? Yeah, Joffrey. And he puts the leeches on the flames. And, obviously Melisandre is casting some sort of, black magic again. And they do this close-up of, obviously I know it's a fake leech, but this leech bubbling and exploding on the flame.
Is it a fake leech, though? Really?
I don't know, man. It was gross. It was really gross.
He might have something to say, even if it was, but...
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know, man. I mean, I saw them go into the flame. I didn't need to see all of that. I mean, I know that we've seen, dismemberment and all kinds of gross things in the show, but just that leech really grossed me out the other night. I don't know what it was about that. I just kind of, it's like girls and spiders or whatever. And like Jocelyn hates spiders. She cringes at them. And I'm me, leeches, same thing. No, thank you. No, thank you. Where do you have any other favorite scenes? Something I noticed about the show, I mean, besides some of the more graphic stuff with leeches was, I feel like lately they've been hitting a lot of really wide shots of the world. People have been complaining that, it hasn't really been that eventful. There's these pairings of Tyrion and Sansa, or Tywin and Joffrey, or Daenerys and her council are just kind of talking. They're all just kind of doing a lot of walking and squawking. But the last couple episodes, specifically from the top of the wall, this episode kind of in the Riverlands and then across the Narrow Sea, I feel like there's been a lot of really kind of showcasing the world. There's been these really wide angles, big budget shots where there's a combination of matte painting and different kind of composite things happening. And they are beautiful. There's a scene where Arya and the Hound are on horseback and he's explaining to her that he's going to ransom her back to her brother so that he can be done with it. And she thought she was taking it, he was taking herself.
Yeah.
So we get to know where he's going and hopefully, Arya gets back to Robb. But while they're saying this, the shot is just of this beautiful riverbank, which I'm sure, is mostly a real place, but I really feel like they're doing a good job of making Westeros feel real and feel
and
grand.
Also large, cause
yeah.
The idea of, the king, Jaime have been captured and dragged around for a year. It has to be a pretty big place, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's somebody else we didn't get to see this week. We didn't see John. Mm-hmm. We didn't see Robb. And we didn't see Jaime.
But last week we didn't see Daenerys, did we? Very briefly, I think, actually.
I think, I think last week there was a conversation with dragons. It was just in the tent. It was nothing.
Yeah.
Again, there hasn't been a lot of action. It's been mostly positioning.
Yeah.
And I still haven't had the time / I forgot to look up whether we've got 10 or 13 episodes this season. If there's only 10, then we're coming up on 9-10. So if there's any big stuff that's going to happen, it may be happening in the next couple of weeks. But even just how long it takes Robb to get from wherever he was kind of south of the Riverlands at Harrenhal back to the Twins is taking 3 and 4 episodes of him traveling. You know, there's nothing happening because he's just moving the army. There's nothing to see here. Just, marching north, back to the Twins. I mean, and for anybody that doesn't remember, the Twins are, it's the Twin Towers that guard a bridge that crosses. Yeah. I don't remember what the name of the river is in the book, but it crosses. It was a key point for Robb to move his forces across. So he agreed to marry one of the Freys, which he's now, his uncle is taking his place, to marry one of the Frey girls now. So it's getting to a point where like a lot of these exchanges and marriages and political alliances are kind of coming to fruition.
A question actually about Rob.
Mm-hmm.
His new wife, Valerian.
Yep.
Spy or no?
I don't know, because it's not the same chick as it was in the book.
Oh, okay.
I mean, same thing happens. Rob marries someone else.
Yeah.
But in the book, she's Westerosi. She's local to the Riverlands somehow. He meets her kind of in battle or through some lord that houses them on their way through. Some supporter of his has a beautiful daughter, and they ended up actually, they do, I mean, and it's true to the form, they do fall in love, and he marries for those kind of reasons when he's supposed to be betrothed to a Frey. Yeah. But I don't know what they're doing with her in the show, because like her character didn't exist in the book.
But that sort of story arc is a possibility then.
Well, I guess they've changed several things. Like, well, I mean, for example, all the stuff with Gendry back at Dragonstone didn't happen in the book.
All right.
The leeches did. Like the sacrifice happened and the names were mentioned, but it was either it didn't happen that way or it was a different kid. Because Gendry and Arya stay together for much longer in the book. And there's more story told there. But again, like there's some things where they just have to, because book three is huge. Yeah. It's such a huge book. Too long, really. Which is why they're cutting it in half with season three. So there's a lot of stuff in there that they just kind of have to push along a little faster. And sometimes to their advantage. Like there's some things in the book that were really kind of long and boring and just don't need to be there. Like there's a lot of stuff... with Jaime and Brienne going south and back and forth like that. I mean, well, you saw in the last episode there where Jaime goes back to save Brienne.
Yeah.
Well, his story goes on for quite some time before he turns around to go back and get her. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just an overnight thing. So I'm glad that they kind of expedited that. It makes more sense that way. And it's a better story and kind of cements them as a pair.
Set up, so you're almost going to start to forgive him as well, you know, like for something.
It really does start to move you on him, huh?
Yeah, when in the last episode when he says, you know, how many, he asked the maester how many people that he's experimented on and killed, and he said, you know, so many, but how many did I save, right? And then he asked Jaime the same question, and Jaime, you know, countless, and Jaime said 500,000, like 500,000.
Yeah.
He's like, well, like King's Landing.
Yeah.
And that's all he says about
the entire population, yeah.
You don't even know, man. You don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So what do you think of Daenerys and what's happening with her?
Ruthless. She's yeah. And her little comment of, you know, you don't have any ships. She's like, a fortnight. I didn't have an army. You know, last year I didn't have any dragons. You know, hold on now, buddy.
Yeah, you just wait. I don't know what it is about Game of Thrones and most of the men in the series, but they're just dickheads and. Mero specifically, and he's the guy that kind of comes up to Daenerys and tries to put his hand on her thigh or, you know, talks very dirty to her. I'm not going to repeat what it is. But what I find interesting about all that is I start to stick my chest out. Like the big brother in me starts to think like, wait a minute, you can't talk to Daenerys like that. And it's because I really like her character. Like you want to see her do well. She's on a good mission. She wants to free slaves. I mean, yes, she's killing people, but she's killing bad people, you know, slavers and murderers and rapists and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, you know, you can't say that to her. You dick, like just mess off, you know, you keep on waiting for somebody or one of the dragons to attack him and just melt him or something. So I thought
for sure she was just going to poison them when she said, you know, take a flagon of wine, and then we need more than that, we'll take a barrel.
Yeah.
I thought she was just going to poison them as easy as that, right?
Yeah. No, I think, I thought the idea was to kind of get them off their rocker. So if she was going to have to attack them the next day, they'd all be kind of hungover and, you know, worse for wear. But I mean, obviously, Dario Naharis, who is the guy that visits her in her tent when she's having a bath, you know, sent there to kill her, you know, shows up with the heads of his two comrades and just kind of basically professes his love for her and her, you know, beauty, and kind of says, like, I'm a much simpler man than my sellsword brethren. Yeah. And I'd rather fight for something worth fighting for than just for pure coin and conquer. And the only thing that bugs me about him is that and they've done this a couple times in the show, the actor is a bit too pretty to play like this hardened sellsword. And I'm not saying he's an attractive man, but he's just got like these gleaming white teeth and these bright white eyes. And they do this in the show, you know, a lot where they get some actor that is very attractive and then they try to dirty them up and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know? And in the book, I mean, again, like not talking again, I draw parallels between the book, but in the book, Dario Naharis has got this really big purple beard and a green mustache. Like, cause all of the troops and the culture in across the Narrow Sea is all very like ornate and this weird kind of combination of kind of East Indian and Chinese cultures. So very bright colors, bright banners, silks and satins, perfumes. Yeah.
Grown to develop their artistic side.
Yeah, like perfumes and dyes and everybody's got a different color hairstyle. Like it's all over the place. To the point where it's a little weird because it's not traditional fantasy.
No, but it's the idea to establish rank as well, especially if you're on the battlefield. Like, who do I follow? The guy with the purple beard.
Yeah, well, precisely. Yeah, after, yeah. I mean, and in Westeros, I mean, like it's toned down for the show, but in the books, again, the banners and the surcoats and the cloaks and stuff in Westeros are all very bright colors, like yellows and greens and pinks and stuff like that. And like, I mean, I can't remember in the show if the flayed man, if the banner, the flayed man banner in the show is as dramatic as it is in the books. But it's black and pink in the books.
Oh, it's I think it's red with a white man flail.
Yeah, like it's different in the show. I mean, again, I mean they have to make some because I mean like you couldn't make the Lord of the Rings with all these bright colors and stuff like that and be all garish with it. I mean, it wouldn't sell. Right. So, I mean, I can understand that you have to do the same thing with Game of Thrones. And I wouldn't want the people in Game of Thrones to look like they're dressed up like DC superheroes, you know. Mm. But it's interesting to see the choices that they've made. And I mean, they have to pick kind of a younger guy for, you know, the actor that's playing Daenerys, you know, for it to make sense that they would be either attracted to one another or at least flirting with one another. You know, they'd have to kind of be in the same sort of wheelhouse. But I couldn't pin it until today. But he reminds me of Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's just got that funny, like, cheekbone jaw structure.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Yeah, you know? A smaller version, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, he's not big. Like, he's not muscly, you know, but just the bone structure. Yeah. He just kind of looks like Schwarzenegger, which to me is not an attractive. Yeah.
you lied, simple man. Yeah. In the Hummer.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what's exactly gonna transpire there and how they're gonna move that forward, but I'm looking forward to seeing Daenerys come into her own because well, I like her pets. The dragons are cool.
You can see how big they can actually get.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean the lore, which they've mentioned a little bit in the show, is that dragons raised in captivity have always stunted. Like they're like goldfish. They grow to be the size that, you know, their environment allows. And Daenerys seems to be quite okay with letting them off the leash. Like, she lets them fly around, you know, they're off the ship, they're, you know, in the air above her army doing whatever they want. So, if that's the case, then, I mean, some of those skulls in King's Landing are the size of a wagon. So, you can only imagine how big these things could possibly get.
She's crossing the sea in the ships, you know, they could be feeding on whales.
Yeah, I mean, tune in for season 7, folks, in 2016?
Whatever. Yeah, we're going to do 7 seasons of this.
Well, season 3 and 4 are probably, I don't know about 4, but 3 and 4 are supposed to be book 3. I would imagine that season 5 would be book 4. Anything beyond season 4 will probably incorporate books 4 and 5 because they both take place at the same time. Okay. So they'll probably spread things around. All right. Spread things around a little bit. Oh, man.
Well, one other thing that jump back, we mentioned earlier there, Arya and the Hound. I really have an affinity for the Hound because he's very, very straightforward. He's a very honorable man in a lot of regards. You know, he'll get there and he's lying there. She came over with a stone and he's like, I'll give you one chance. No, if you don't do it, I'm going to break both your hands. He's very matter of fact. This is the way it is. This is what's going to happen. So yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Right on. Well, I guess we can wrap up talking about Sam and Jilly. I really liked the scene, and I like what's happening with Sam. He's still a fraidy cat, but I like the fact that he is not frozen. Like, he still will do survival stuff. He will at least react. And I feel like it's Jilly and the baby that are kind of bringing that out in him, like bringing out like the big brother or the protector sort of thing.
And the standing there, you know, standing his ground with the sword, and then the White Walker grabs a hold of the sword, and you see what happens. So it's a good chance to show the power of them, right?
Mm. So. I mean, they're obviously mystical. I mean, they don't even just bother to punch and kick or. I mean, did he even have a weapon? Did he have a dagger? I can't remember what he had with him.
He was sauntering up.
Yeah, just walking up. Because they wanted the baby, I guess.
But that comes back to, why did he want the baby?
Because Caster, at Caster's Keep, who was the old man that they killed, whenever he had a son, he would walk it into the woods and give it to the walkers, and that's why the walkers would leave him alone.
Yeah, but why? But what are they doing?
What do they do with them? Yeah, I don't know. Other than maybe that's how they create new White Walkers. Like that's I don't know. After reading all five books, I still don't know what happens there. You know, we already mentioned the fact that Sam drops the dragon glass, but it's cool to know that there's obviously something that can stop the walkers.
But the problem is, though, that all that dragon glass is going to be on the other side of the wall once everybody comes on the other side of the wall. We got to go back. Shit.
Damn it. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know if the wall would stop the white walkers. I mean, the whites won't have a chance, but the white walkers, I mean, I can see them doing something, you know, climbing the wall, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was really well done about that scene, and that was giving, I mean, it's obvious, but the crows.
Yeah.
In the tree, when there's one, then there's two, and then there's like just a whole murder of crows. Just.
And then they get quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they stop, and Jocelyn like kind of looked at one another like, ooh, it's on now. Because in the book, Sam confronts a white as well, but it's much earlier. And Jocelyn was really disappointed because it was a very important character point for Sam. And she thought that they were going to keep him a fraidy cat for much longer. Okay. And I knew that they were going to try to put it in somewhere else, but it was nice to see it happen.
They did establish this fraidy catness. That White Walker he killed was the same White Walker on the horse in the earlier.
It looked like it was the same guy. Yeah. Yeah, whether or not they have different models for them. But yeah, it does. It did look like the same guy. It looks like the same guy that he saw. Because didn't he see one?
Yeah, he saw one on the back of the horse when he was hiding behind the rock.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And at that point, does Sam have the glass on him at that point?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know.
Or did he? No, I think he found a glass with his two buddies.
Yeah, okay, no, he would. He would have.
He had the glass on him, so maybe the White Walker was like, you know, I see you there, but I'll leave you be because you got the glass there.
Oh, that could be it too. I never thought about that. See, and I couldn't tell whether the White Walker was intended to be the same one or whether it was just for budgetary reasons they used the same CG model. Like, I don't know. Or makeup. I mean, they do such a good job with the show that I couldn't really tell you. Well, that's it for me. I don't have anything else to say about this episode. I mean, do you have anything you're looking forward to for the rest of the season?
I'm liking how Jamie's developing.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, and the entire Robb Stark and all that nonsense, you know, at this point I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and the bit with not Tyrion, Tywin, at the wedding was interesting. Everybody started giggling when Tyrion was trying to put the shawl over Sansa's back, and it was giggling, and Tywin just turned around, everybody just shut up, right?
Yeah.
So it's very clear in that circle of people who is actually in charge.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
For now, anyway. Right?
Yeah. But, and I mean, as much as he is not a nice guy, I enjoy him as a villain.
Yeah.
And he does it very, very well.
And his motivation, all the characters' motivations are pretty clear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right on. Well, I guess we can move on to the other things that we have been watching. Have you seen Star Trek?
Not as of yet, no.
Okay, so I did. Jocelyn and I went to go see it last night, so I will give a spoiler-free tidbit about it. It is super fun.
Cool.
I highly recommend everybody see this in theater. It is so worth it. It's a big budget Star Trek movie. It is just as fun, just as funny, and just as action packed as the first one from a couple years ago. I really, really enjoyed it. And I can't pronounce his name. Benedict Cumberbatch or yeah. Cumberbatch plays
cucumber.
Nice. He plays the character, the bad guy. I mean, the trailers kind of make it very clear that he's not a nice guy. He is phenomenal, like venomous. He's right. Brilliant to watch in that role. Highly, highly recommend. That's it. I won't say anything else because I don't want to. I don't want to spoil anything, but it was very worth the $8 to go check that out in the theater.
I'm hoping to see it as well. And the there was a thing actually on Twitter or something where the writer came on and apologized for the scene of Alice Eve in her underwear. He's like, "That was a bit gratuitous. Sorry about that, guys."
Yeah,
it was a little. It wasn't quite necessary. Right?
No, it wasn't necessary.
Like the shots of like, you know,
but it's
Kirk.
It's the idea that Kirk is a woman, like is a bit of a womanizer, and and it's not out of context in the whole movie because he's constantly hitting on people,
yeah,
right. So I mean, again, like I don't want to get into too many spoilers because it's just worth just kicking back and enjoying for everything that it is. Yeah. I mean, everything from Bones and Scotty, and they do such a good job being new and being their own characters, but also paying homage to the original series and all that kind of stuff, and it was a great deal of fun. So
yeah, there was a guy on some review show on like CTV or something, and he was talking about Star Trek, and then he proceeded to say, and Cucumber plays this guy, and he says, and a spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear, close your ears. I'm like, I'll just turn the channel. Like, don't give away the spoiler in a review on a nationally syndicated TV show. That's just
like
rude,
less
man.
Than a week than the movie has been aired. You know, like it came out like last Wednesday.
And yeah, it's like giving away the ending of Sixth Sense. You know?
Yeah. Oh, precisely. And I one of the reasons why I'm being so careful and not spoiling anything here is because I had several plot points spoiled for me via Twitter, because people were just talking about it or they'd be talking about something completely unrelated. So you're reading their tweet because you follow them, but at the end, their hashtag is Into Darkness or Star Trek, and they're making a joke, but the joke completely ruins, the movie. And you're just like,
big
you
reveal,
son
right?
of yeah. a bit. Like, it's only been 5 days. Like, just say you liked it and wait. Just wait. So I was kind of ticked off. And Jocelyn felt that, I mean, she didn't really like the movie, and she feels that it was not a surprise, and she feels that the trailers and the amount of trailers that she saw ruined it for her. Like, she felt like she saw the whole movie and pieced most of it together from the trailers. So we're going to try and stay away from trailers until the rest of the other summer movies come out, because we don't want to spoil the fun.
What happened last year with the Amazing Spider-Man? They released so much behind the scenes and trailer footage that someone went online and grabbed everything and pieced together a 23-minute cut of the film.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. That's like a third of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not a third, but, a good chunk.
It was pretty funny, yeah.
A good chunk. So what have you been watching that's not Game of Thrones related?
I saw Iron Man 3.
Ooh, okay. Well, it's been a couple of weeks. We can probably get into that because, spoiler alert, people, if you haven't seen it, then, tune out. But both you and I have seen it. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. The Pepper Potts thing with the, was a bit, I don't know.
She spent more time in the suit than Iron Man did.
Yeah. I sort of get that, but the blowing it up, like, that's an awful lot of technology to leave around. I mean, in Terminator, they found a hand. They were able to reverse engineer Skynet, right?
Yeah.
So, if you're blowing up 42, Mark 42s all over the place.
Yeah.
That's a bit silly.
Well, and I didn't like the fact that, there was no one in them.
Yeah.
I understand that Jarvis was, computer piloting most of them and stuff. And I was really...
The mainframe for Jarvis was in the house that was blowing up. So what exactly is it? Like, is he cloud computing?
I was disappointed in a great deal with that movie.
The kid bit was fun,
It was fun, and that was okay, but immediately after that...
It was the Jar Jar Binks thing, so that was good.
Yeah, but he should have got back in the suit and started doing, his own thing. I liked some of the designs of the suits. I don't read the comics. I'm assuming they had some relevance.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a big stuff on it. Like the one that jacked up the crane, that was one of the Hulkbuster suits.
Yeah, I figured that.
And there was one of the suits that was supposed to be like for deep space exploration. And initially, there was some talk of the end credit sequence after the credits roll being Iron Man in the deep space suit in outer space, meeting up with the guys from the Guardians of the Galaxy as a way of introducing that story arc. But they, like, I guess that was leaked, and then, I don't know, Disney and Marvel said, no, we'll do this other thing where he's, you know, annoying the shit out of Banner.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like, but, that. I mean, that didn't have any kind of teaser relevance at all. I mean, it was funny, but
it was funny, but it, yeah. I think yeah, there was like some serious talk, I guess, of the other one. So
yeah, I feel like I got a question for you, because you might know the answer to this. In the comics, does Jarvis ever get his own suit?
Jarvis was an actual person in the show. He was like Alfred.
Oh,
right.
Okay, I didn't know that. I thought the movies were being true to the Iron Man comic.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of different incarnations of it, you know.
Okay.
People knew who Iron Man was, didn't know he was.
Well, I thought that would make sense, because I thought, you know, like Tony Stark has a suit, he's Iron Man. You know, then there's War Machine and then he turns into like the Iron Patriot, and then he's got his suit. And it would make sense that Iron Man would need some help, and that he would give a suit to Jarvis to pilot and be kind of like have a physical presence, as opposed to just being like, you know, in the ether, you know, floating around.
One of the things I keep hearing people talk about is, like, you know, where were the rest of the Avengers during this entire story?
Yeah.
But really, on a grand global scale, the Mandarin was a threat, but a bit of a nuisance more than anything. It was like, it's not warranting, you know, putting together this super team for it. Now, Captain America probably could have, you know, said, hey, what's up? You need a hand?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. But, you need a slow clap, Iron Man. I'm here for you, buddy. I mean, it was entertaining. It was, the effects were cool. Like, I mean, same thing with Star Trek. Iron Man 3 is getting to the point where it is damn near flawless, the effects that they're doing. Except, and I mean, you might have caught this too. After they disarm who they think is the Mandarin, both Tony Stark and I can't remember the guy that plays Iron Patriot.
Don Cheadle.
Are hanging around talking, and Tony Stark is bloodied. He's got a scar and a bleeding eye going down one side of his face, and in that scene in the mansion, it's on the wrong side. The CG projection of Downey Jr. inside of the helmet is flipped, and it's wrong. And it's the scenes before it and the scenes after his eye is bloody on, I can't remember which side it is. I think it's his right eye, but in the other scenes it's his left, or vice versa. But they switch it, and it is like in your face wrong. Like somebody lost their job, you know, over that, because that. I mean, I'm not even a picky nerd like that. I just noticed this because I used to, you know, like I work in the industry, and like, you know, I animation and stuff. I would know that kind of thing. But I mean, there are continuity nerds out there that would just rip this to shreds.
When the reporter asked him, you know, what do you want to do? And he's like, it's personal, I'm coming for you and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, when they do a cutaway, the reporter who's talking to him on his, like, his iPhone or whatever, is actually, he has two different phones. At one point, it's a flip phone. Another point is, like, a touch phone.
Oh, yeah? Jeez. Well, I mean, the whole movie was obviously supposed to be released in December. Because the whole thing is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
They're all like, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, hun. And it's like, May. Like, what? I mean, I feel like the whole thing was supposed to be released kind of like for the Christmas, you know, schedule, and then it got somehow put back. I don't know. I wasn't impressed. I feel like Iron Man, the first movie, was the strongest of the three.
Well, but I guess in order of appeal, it'll be 1, 3, and 2, right?
Yes. Yeah, I could say that. Two is not great.
Yeah.
Two is not great. Whatever.
Yeah, other odds and ends here, watching here and there. But the other thing I was enjoying was the Man of Steel trailer, the new one. But again, what you were saying about spoilers, you know, I watched it, I was like, oh, that was great. He punches people and all that stuff. And he's, you know, he's a bit of a roughhouse. And they're like, oh, there's a spoiler.
Agreed. So there's a spoiler. Yeah, we might as well, I mean, we won't go into the details. But I mean, if you have not seen the new Superman trailer, might I suggest you skip it? Just leave it. The movie comes out in a couple of weeks. Just go see it. Because... again, they give you way, way too much. And I don't know why Hollywood seems to be doing that lately with this stuff, but it's royally annoying.
They have no faith in audiences or their intelligence or their just loyalty.
Yeah, I'm a big Superman fan, you know, movies and comic books. Yeah, imagine that. And I'm really looking forward to this movie. I can appreciate the motivations and stuff behind it, but I don't need to be smacked over the head with it before I even see the film, you know? Like, I just... Hopefully they will surprise me. I'm hoping it's going to be good, but... And what's surprising to me is that so many of my very critical nerd friends on Twitter are just like, this is amazing! And I was like, yeah, it was a cool trailer, but dude, like... I think I know the whole movie now.
Yeah.
You know, so, whatever. But at least you know there's going to be a fight, right?
A prequel online. There's a prequel comic for this online that involves other elements of this backstory.
Mm.
And it's an interesting little read, and it can inform a couple things. So, but again, it's full of spoilers. So.
Yeah, I'd rather read that after.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Because then you go back, like, oh, okay, that's what, you know, X, Y, or Z was. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, I've got some other things to share, but, I mean, dude, we're out of time. It's what happens when you're away for 2 weeks and and I come on, it's like, ah, comics and nerd stuff, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Too funny. Well, it's all right, because my pick is not going anywhere. It's something that we can carry forward if you're okay with that.
Same too. So yeah. It's all good, man.
And it's getting late here. I have not had my dinner yet, so you don't want Hangry Joel on a podcast. That would be a nasty adventure for everyone. But that's it. That is the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on joelduggan.com/live. You can also check out the show on demand on iTunes or the website, thecitadelcafe.com, which is where I will, of course, post show notes, including the time code for where you can skip over the Game of Thrones stuff that we talk about. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can also drop us a line if you've got something that you'd like to contribute to tell us what you thought of Star Trek or Iron Man 3 or When the Time Comes, The Man of Steel. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or catch us as The Citadel Cafe on the social media network of your choice. Don't forget to tune into The Gamers Inn on Friday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. And also check out their feed on iTunes, because they posted a special supplemental episode yesterday on the Xbox One announcement, which is the new system for Microsoft coming out later this year. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com, including my book, Starcrossed Volume 1, which is available in my web store. Peyton, where can the kind people find you online?
GarboTrios.com and social media, just Peyton Francis. You'll find me around.
Fantastic. Welcome back, sir. Good to have you back on mic. And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap. But you can only pick two.
Dun, 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 dun.
Just not Iron Man 2. Don't ever pick Iron Man 2. Or Transformers 2, for that matter. Yeah. There's a lot of sequels that just suck monkey chucks, eh?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, the Joel Schumacher Batman movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Joel Schumacher directing Game of Thrones.
Oh, shoot me in the face
that
now.
Would be hilarious.
All the armor's got nipples on it.
Yeah. Glow sticks.
Black paint or black light paint on everything. Oh, dude. You really would get purple beards and green mustaches then.